Welcome back. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. It's hard to believe, but one of the top debates in this country over the past few weeks has been about birth control and whether health insurance companies should be required to pay for it. Who's dominating this debate? The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. That's a group of men who have no health background. They opposed an Obama administration rule requiring health insurance plans, including those provided by Catholic-affiliated hospitals and universities, to cover contraception. Bowing to pressure from the bishops, the administration modified its rule requiring the insurance company, not the employer, to provide the contraception. But that did not appease the Conference of Catholic Bishops. They plan to make this a major election year issue with TV ads and possibly asking evangelical pastors across the country to read an opposition letter to congregants. So who are the USCCB? The Huffington Post calls them one of the quietest yet most powerful lobbies on Capitol Hill. According to a Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life survey, the number of religious lobbying or advocacy organizations in the U.S. increased from fewer than 40 in 1970 to more than 200 today, with about 20% of them affiliated with the Roman Catholic Church. These groups spend at least $390 million a year on efforts to influence national public policy. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops ranked second among all religious advocacy or lobbying groups, trailing the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. So how did the conference become so powerful? Why are Catholic bishops dominating this birth control debate? And how does the U.S. Conference of Bishops influence policy in Washington? What other issues do they work on? Today we're joined by John O'Brien. He's president of Catholics for Choice. That's an organization that serves as a voice for Catholics who believe that the Catholic tradition supports a woman's moral and legal right to follow her conscience in matters of sexuality and reproductive health. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Rose. Thank you.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Barbara Blaine. Barbara is Outreach Director for Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, or SNAP. That's the country's oldest and largest self-help organization for victims of clergy sexual abuse, which was founded in 1991 and is now a nationwide all-volunteer group with 2,400 members and numerous local chapters. Hi, Barbara. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm actually president, not outreach director.
Oh, you're president.
That's okay. And we actually were founded in 1988.
Oh, okay. So. Sorry about that. Your website actually says outreach director.
It's a different Barbara, but that's okay.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining
Sorry.
Us. That's okay.
Yeah.
I should also say that we did invite the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops to join us, but they did not respond to our interview requests. So why don't we start off by talking about the basics? On their website, they describe themselves as an assembly of the hierarchy of the United States and the U.S. Virgin Islands who jointly exercise certain pastoral functions on behalf of the Christian faithful of the United States. Barbara, let's start off with you. How would you describe the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops?
Well, it's the organization of Catholic bishops from the United States, and the way the church operates, they have these kinds of conferences in every nation so that the bishops of each country form together in one, you know, kind of united front.
And go ahead.
Sorry. In the U.S., you know, there are about, I don't know, 350, maybe John knows, to less than 400 bishops, I believe. And there's one head bishop or what they call a prelate in every diocese. And he could be a bishop or an archbishop or a cardinal, but he would be the head of each diocese or archdiocese. And there's about, I think, 110 dioceses?
Is that right, John? Are there 110 dioceses?
Yeah, that's about the size of it. I think so. You know, what's interesting, I think, about the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops is that it basically operates in Washington, D.C., less to be about sort of pastoral issues and far more to be about political issues. It sort of beggars belief that as a Catholic, social justice, we're brought up to believe that social justice is very important, the preferential option for the poor, the idea that somebody out there isn't doing as well. And as Catholics, what we're called on to do is to look out for those folks. It really was interesting during the health insurance reform debate, which was, you know, a very important strategic moment in this nation's history. The idea that the Conference of Catholic Bishops should take such an extreme position that they are willing to bring down health insurance reform, which really is of interest to the poorest of the poor in this country. They're willing to bring that down because they didn't get an unreasonable set of demands about abortion met, a set of demands that even Catholic lobby groups like the Catholic Health Association didn't, and some of the religious groups like Network, the lobbying group of progressive nuns, they weren't standing with the bishops during that health insurance reform debate. But what really, you know, you need to pay attention to is that when you think about it, the bishops weren't protesting outside of Congress. They were in the back rooms with people like Nancy Pelosi. That's how powerful they are. The lawyers, the bishops, the cardinals, they actually are in the back rooms of Congress, both with Republicans and with Democrats, trying to influence public policy in this country in their favor. And what we saw during the health insurance reform debate, I think it shocked quite a number of people, because people are like, we've got a lot of religious traditions in this country, but how come the bishops have this type of power? How come they're given this type of influence by political power? And that's the interesting question that I hope today we have an opportunity to talk about.
Well, I definitely want to talk about that. I've been asking this question for many weeks, specifically because of the birth control debate, but I'd also like to talk about where they stand on other issues. So again, just going over some of the basics, John, what is the bishop's relationship to Catholic churches across the country?
The way it operates is that each bishop really has a sort of fiefdom, that they are totally in control of the diocese that they operate from. So it's very rare that you find one bishop criticizing another bishop. Usually the bishop runs the show. Now that means that if a bishop is very liberal, things go on in that diocese that would be more liberally oriented. Or as was the case with Bishop Olmsted in Phoenix, Arizona, Bishop Olmsted decided he heard that a woman who was her life was threatened and she needed to have an abortion. There was an ethics committee in this Catholic hospital and there was a nun on that ethics committee. And they discussed the case, and in conjunction with the woman and her husband, they decided that the best thing for this woman, the best thing for her health, to ensure that she would live and be able to return to her husband and her two children, was for her to have a termination of pregnancy. It's a very sad decision. The bishop found out about that subsequently, and in spite of the fact that he has no medical degrees, he excommunicated the nun. He said that she was excommunicated. He went on to stop the hospital being able to call itself a Catholic hospital anymore, and using the ethical and religious directives. These are a set of rules that the bishops, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, have drawn up. He used those rules in order to basically come down hard and heavy on the hospital. Now, that's the type of fiefdom, that's the type of influence that a Catholic bishop can have over schools, over hospitals. And it would be absolutely fine if this was paid for out of the Vatican's coffers. But the truth is, it's actually paid for by the listeners to this program. Taxpayer money is very often taken by Catholic charities, by Catholic hospitals, by Catholic schools, and that's what really is behind the current debate. It looks as though it's about contraception, and to a part it is. They're trying to get government to basically discriminate against workers at Catholic-controlled institutions so they can't get access to contraception. That's what the bishop's lobby is currently about. But in reality, that's the tip of the iceberg, because what's submerged underwater and you can't see is the fact that the bishops are trying to get a pass on being able to take taxpayer money and not play by the same rules as everybody else in the United States on a number of issues.
And Barbara, how did they get so much power in Washington, D.C.?
Well, I think a lot has to do with their the ability of their financial resources to lobby lawmakers. And they have been using that lobby power for many of these conservative issues. But what's so interesting is that a couple things. One thing, first of all, is that I think it's really important to recognize that these same bishops who are trying to control women's reproduction are the same bishops who have and continue to cover up for priests who sexually violate and rape children and other vulnerable adults. Mm. So I think that we have to question their moral authority to be speaking about these issues when they're still covering up for child molesters. I mean, just last week in Wisconsin, a predator priest was declared a sexually violent person, and his name Norbert Mayday. And do you know that Cardinal George from Chicago had intervened to try to get special treatment for Father Mayday when he was imprisoned? And even when Father Mayday's mother died, both Cardinal George and then governor of Wisconsin advocated on behalf of this priest who's in prison for molesting kids. And I mean, I don't know the exact number, but I hear it's over 36 victims of his. And the thing is that they, when the priest's mother died, they allowed them to bring the funeral home brought the mother's body to the prison so that Father Mayday could have this viewing of his mother. And I think that, again, was at taxpayer money. No one ever has really defined where the money came from, but, you know, it was a large expense, and no one knows who paid for it, but it did happen. And as far as we know, it's never happened before or since.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up, Barbara, because anytime I hear the Catholic bishops on the radio or see them on television speaking with such authority about women's sexual health and birth control, I'm just waiting for the host or a panelist to say, well, wait, shouldn't you be spending your resources on sex abuse? And I have not heard one person ask that question. So then I started saying, well, am I asking the right question here? I mean, do you think that this question should be brought up in this dialogue?
No question. I mean, they're so ready to vehemently deny women the right to use contraception, while at the same time, they do nothing to stop priests who, well, I shouldn't say they do nothing to stop. We have to acknowledge that clearly the church is safer today than it was 10 years ago. But at the same time, for the most part, most of the predator priests have never been criminally prosecuted. For the most part, bishops still to this day stonewall and don't turn over information to law enforcement officials. Most of the identities of predators have never been made public, and so many of them are allowed to just continue to pose a risk to children, without being monitored. And this is all going on at the same time that the bishops are preaching these kinds of moral positions.
John O'Brien, why do these bishops still have so much credibility, given everything we've seen with the child abuse sex scandal?
It's a good question, and I wanted to go back to it because you asked, like, why do they have power? And I think one of the reasons they have power is because people give it to them. And I think that's sort of critical to look at why people actually do that. Take what's going on at the moment. You know, people were saying, wow, the administration was taken by surprise when this rule came out about contraception from Health and Human Services. And we saw a massive campaign by the bishops. They set up a committee months and months ago. So last September 30th, on their website, there appears a press release letting us know that the bishops have established a new ad hoc committee for religious liberty. That sounds interesting. You think of places in the world where religious liberty is really threatened. You think of China. You think of various places in the Middle East. And you think, yeah, sure, I know that there's people being persecuted because of their personal religious beliefs. Oh, no, this committee is not about in some other parts of the world. It's the bishops claiming that their religious liberty is being infringed upon. So what they did was, with this committee, they stacked it with PR professionals. They stacked it with crack lawyers. And what they planned to do last September was to launch a campaign in 2012 to have their cake and eat it. Basically, they want to be able, this is about business, they want to be able to take taxpayer money, and they want to be able to provide services. And they want to be able to provide those services in the way that they want to do it. So they have a shopping list of things they want. The first thing on the shopping list was they wanted to be able to deny workers at Catholic institutions contraception. The second thing they wanted to do, not a lot of people noticed, but a number of months ago, the bishops, as part of the, they have a migration and refugee service, and they take, again, taxpayer money in order to provide services for refugees and people who've been victims of sex trafficking. The bishops had a contract, and that contract came up for examination again, and it wasn't awarded to the bishops. It was awarded to three other American organizations. Those organizations were going to provide comprehensive services to refugees and victims of sex trafficking. One of the things I'm sure many listeners know is that women and men who find themselves in that situation are very often in need of reproductive health services, very often in need of, for example, emergency contraception. What the bishops wanted to do was to continue to take taxpayer money and not provide those services. So that so that's number two on their shopping list. Number three, they take a lot of money from USAID. They take a lot of money for, under the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief. They want to be able to take money to combat HIV and AIDS, even doing testing. But if you're tested, they don't want to provide you with safer sex methods or to make those safer sex methods available to you. That means I was out in Kenya and Uganda. And in the rural areas in Kenya and Uganda, the Catholic hierarchy's services dominate. Now, there's lots of great workers out there, some of them Catholic, some of them not Catholic, working for Catholic charities. But those workers are not supposed to be giving out condoms. Now, that means if you're in a rural area and you're tested positive, you're going to go back to your partner, and believe me, you will have sex again. And the bishops will don't want a free pass and not be able to do what everybody else in the world believes, is that if you're HIV positive, you should be using a condom. Number three, they wanted not to adhere to the defense of they objected to the Justice Department's attack on what they regard as the Defense of Marriage Act. They want to be able to, in employment, for example, they want to be able to discriminate. So if you're a gay or a lesbian couple and your union is recognized, they don't want to recognize that insurance that your partner has. Maybe they want to be able to, in the future, maybe disapprove, for example, if you were a heterosexual couple and you were having sex outside marriage. Maybe they want to be able to pick and choose whether they're going to employ you or not, or if you're lesbian or gay. So in the reality is that the bishops have a large shopping list of things they want to pressure the body politic. This is 2012. It's an election year. The Republicans were very happy to embrace something to beat President Obama with. What they were able to take is they're able to take the idea of, in some way, the bishop's religious liberty being impinged upon because they are being, quote, forced to provide contraception, which they're not. It's totally untrue. They're not providing the contraception. It's part of insurance coverage. But they want to be able to opt out of that, just as they want to be able to opt out of these other things, but they want to still be able to compete for government contracts and taxpayer money. So I believe that that is really at the heart of this issue. And the lobby by the U.S. bishops has less to do with pastoral issues, far more to do with political issues, and it has to do with putting pressure, not just on Republicans, because believe me, when the bishops come out with a statement, rather naively, I think the Democrats also start to break into a sweat. And that's the problem that we have. We have a problem with politicians who are way too deferential to religious lobby groups.
That is John O'Brien. He is president of Catholics for Choice, an organization that serves as a voice for Catholics who believe that the Catholic tradition supports a woman's moral and legal right to follow her conscience in matters of sexuality and reproductive health. Barbara Blaine is president for Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests. It's the nation's oldest and largest self-help organization for victims of clergy sexual abuse. And today we are talking about the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. Why are these men so powerful? Why do they have so much influence in Washington, D.C.? And we'd love to hear from you. If you have any questions about the USCCB, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you're Catholic, if you go to a Catholic church, do you accept the authority of the USCCB? A lot of people, a lot of women specifically, say they're completely out of touch when it comes to things like birth control because an estimated 98% of Catholic women have taken birth control in their lifetime. So on this issue also, why do they still have so much influence over birth control? The toll-free number, 866-798-8255. You can leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. You can also email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Marie-Louise in Palo Alto. Hi, Marie-Louise.
Good morning. Well, I am thinking one thing is that perhaps if the bishops and many of the Catholic people, high reps, stand by this crazy idea, then we could maybe ask them to turn the Vatican, which is large, into a place where children who don't have homes otherwise, who cannot be taken care of, maybe they could be growing up there. I'm not sure if they're going to be safe, though, considering what goes on in the world. Anyway, that's just a crazy little comment. But I also wanted to tell you a statement I heard from an Italian woman about 30 years ago, and she said about the Pope, and this is her sentence, he don't play the game, he don't set the rules. Could you hear me with that stuttering that
yes,
you did?
Yes.
Okay, so he doesn't play the game, he doesn't set the rules.
Mm.
And, you know, I just, that could grow for the bishops, lots of other people.
Well, thank you for calling, Marie-Louise, and since you brought up the Vatican last week, the Catholic Church, Italy's Catholic Church, lost their tax-exempt status. According to the BBC, they have 110,000 properties worth about 9 billion euros. This includes shopping centers and a range of residential property, and so they're going to lose their tax-exempt status. Barbara Blaine, what are your thoughts on Marie-Louise's comment? And then also, would you comment on what John said about just, I'm still trying to figure out why the USCCB has so much power in Washington.
Well, it's interesting that they hold that power in Washington because at the same time, as you explained, the percentage of Catholic women who use contraception is really high. And so it seems as though Catholic women themselves are not listening to the bishops, even though it seems as though lawmakers are. And I think it's important to recognize that the same issues that unite the bishops are with the conservatives are these issues that have to do with gender issues and the role and the right of women, and this whole idea of controlling sexuality of the faithful, because in reality, there are so many other issues that the bishops take positions on that would be looked upon as liberal.
Mm.
And yet those same conservative lawmakers want to support the bishops, but at the same time, when the bishops speak about say the impact on poverty, or the bishops have taken positions that regarding immigration and regarding capital punishment, that many in the conservative political movement would find to be at odds. And somehow it seems as though those same conservatives want to disregard those issues, and you know, they seem to have no difficulty joining in with the bishops when the bishops are involved in these positions on, you know, having to do with contraception and sexuality.
Well, Barbara, I'm glad you brought this up, because after the break, I'd like to cite an article from Juan Cole, who writes the Informed Comment blog. He's got a piece called Top 10 Catholic Teachings Rick Santorum Rejects While Obsessing About Birth Control. And if you'd like to join us, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. This is your call. We'll be back after this.
If you're on Facebook, becoming a part of KLW is an easy way to spread the word about the programming you value right here on Local Public Radio. It's easy. Just click the Facebook link on the front page of KLW.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. You can find more information about the show at yourcallradio.org. You can also sign up for our newsletter there to find out what's coming up. Tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about imported food. Over 80% of fish and 45% of fresh fruit consumed comes from another country. 15% of all food in the U.S. is imported, but only 1% is inspected. So what does food safety mean to you, and do you know where your food comes from? And then on Wednesday, we will have a conversation about Occupy the Prisons, which is happening as we speak. There are solidarity actions in all across the country, solidarity with more than 2 million people incarcerated. Today is National Occupy Day in support of prisoners. And so we'll be keeping a close eye on what's happening throughout the day and having a conversation about it on Wednesday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Who are they? How did they become so powerful? And why do they have so much influence in Washington, D.C.? This is a group of men who have no health background, yet they are dominating the debate over birth control. They are also going to spend a lot of money and resources this year to go after the administration on birth control and abortion. So what do you think about this group? What questions do you have? If you're Catholic, what do you think about the USCC? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can leave a comment at yourcallradio.org or email us feedback@yourcallradio.org. We did invite the USCCB to come on the show, but we never heard back from them. We are joined by John O'Brien, president of Catholics for Choice, and Barbara Blaine, president of Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, or SNAP. And in a minute, we will talk about some of the other issues that the USCCB fights for or at least talks about, but maybe they don't spend that much time talking about it, because I'd love to ask our guests. They officially oppose the death penalty, but I don't really hear them talking about it half as much as they do about birth control. So why is that? But first, let's take a few calls. Let's hear from Sarah in Carmel. Hi, Sarah. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
I just want to make a comment and say that I think that the Vatican should put their resources towards infrastructure for mothers and children, because I feel like there's a big void in that area. And, you know, maybe shift the debate a little bit less about birth control and sort of, you know, the bigger picture. So, yeah, that's just my comment. And there's a organization, Sisters of Life, in New York, who definitely embody this concept, and they're really inspiring. And so, I just wanted to let everyone know about that.
All right. Well, thank you for calling, Sarah. We'll get a response in just a minute. Let's hear from Michael in San Francisco. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for the show very much. Quickly, why do politicians get together with the Catholic bishops? Both bodies want to control people, and if one can scratch the other's back, they certainly will get together to increase each other's powers. I want to just say, I think we ought to look to the Professor Moriarty in this situation. Opus Dei is an extremely powerful organization. I think it runs the Vatican right now, and I think it has great control over what the Catholic bishops do. They have offices in New York, and I'm sure the word goes forth, not from the mouth or the burning bush, but from the offices of Opus Dei. Yes, I am a conspiracist, and there's no reason not to believe that Opus Dei doesn't have extremely powerful tentacles in the U.S. political situation. Thanks very much.
All right. Well, thank you for calling. We have a couple of emails, one from Shoshana in Oakland, who says, as far as I'm concerned, if these people succeed in denying a large swath of American women their basic health needs, it will constitute an establishment of a state religion. We are going at the argument from the wrong direction. Religious freedom belongs to me, not the Catholic bishops, who, by the way, have a fine nerve speaking on any matters pertaining to the bedroom. Thank you for that email. We've got an email from Berkeley, a listener who says, as a former Catholic, someone needs to bring the Catholic hierarchy into the 21st century. Our political system is debating the right of women to get contraceptives through their employee insurance. What a medieval debate. Does anyone see most Catholic women having 8 to 12 children anymore? Most Catholic women use contraceptives. What if a religion said that God is against gays and therefore our public institutions won't allow AIDS treatments to be covered by employee insurance? If Catholic institutions want to accept public money, then they must conform to public standards with regard to non-discrimination. Thank you for that email. And we have a very long email from Rashid, who says, in September of 2002, during the feverish weapons of mass destruction rhetoric and the ramp up of the push to attack Iraq, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops issued a statement that even if Iraq did have WMDs, a U.S. attack on Iraq could not be morally justified, since Iraq had not attacked the U.S. The U.S. Conference reiterated this position in December 2002. The Pope also stated that an aggressive attack on Iraq could not be considered a, quote, just war. Well, thank you for the email. And on that note, I wanted to ask you both about this piece by Juan Cole. It says, Top 10 Catholic Teachings Santorum Rejects While Obsessing About Birth Control. And he goes over a long list here, saying that the Conference of Catholic Bishops requires that health care be provided to all Americans. They oppose the death penalty. They have urged that the federal minimum wage be increased. They want welfare for all needy families. They say that the basic rights of workers must be respected. They should have the right to join a union. The Catholic bishops demand the withdrawal of Israel from Palestinian territories occupied in 1967. The list just goes on here. Stop going after immigrants. First of all, John, does this list sound about right to you?
You know, I really want to address something in relation to this, and I think it's very important for your listeners who are Catholic like me, and also for non-Catholics as well who are listening to this program. The first thing you need to remember is that you have to be careful when you say the Catholic Church.
Right.
The Catholic Church. What is the Catholic Church? Very often people sort of refer to positions that the Catholic hierarchy take, or the Vatican takes, or indeed it's defined by someone like Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum is an uber-conservative Catholic. He doesn't represent the rank-and-file Catholics that every day make up part of the Church. There's a reason why I'm Catholic. I'm Catholic because of the social justice tradition. I'm Catholic because I grew up in the Republic of Ireland. I was brought up in this tradition. I find there's great comfort when I go to Mass. I like the fact that in my church we do a lot with homeless folks, and we do a lot for people who do have unplanned pregnancies. We do a lot with the Latino community. The Latino community is very big in my particular parish. So there's lots of reasons why people are Catholic. The United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, as Barbara referred to earlier on, has 350 members. There are 350 bishops who, you know, most of the time seem to agree together, but not always. But there's 60 million Catholics in the United States of America. Those Catholics vote year after year after year. What you'll find is when Catholics are asked, when Catholic voters are asked, what are you concerned about? Amazingly, do you know what they're worried about? They're worried about health care. They're worried about getting their kids an education. They're worried about the slow downturn in the economy and trying to keep their jobs. They're worried about the same issues as every other American is. So Catholics are not the problem. And as one of your callers said, Catholics use birth control. 98% of Catholic women have used a method of contraception that the bishops don't like. So Catholics are the exact same. But the difficulty for us is that the hierarchy in our church, and to be quite honest with you, some uber-conservative Catholics who happen to grab the microphone far more often than not, like Rick Santorum, they give the impression that in some way this is Catholicism. It's not Catholicism. And it's not as though we just got up one morning and we decided that, hey, we're not going to follow the bishops. The bishops are the leaders in my church, and I do listen to what they have to say. Sometimes they say good things, but far too often, sadly, they're sort of stuck in the pelvic zone. They seem to have a concentration about sex and sexuality that is almost bordering on obsession. When they do things in this area, it definitely doesn't represent the views of Catholics in the United States. So I think it's important that when we look at Rick Santorum, his views on a number of issues, his views on some of the social justice issues, like the death penalty, war, the idea of the preferential option for the poor. You know, there's a lot in relation to Catholic teaching that Rick doesn't exactly go along with, but he's spot on the money with regards to what the bishop's position on abortion and contraception is. The reality is that, and people need to know this, within Catholicism, we are not required to be robots. Quite the opposite. What you're required to do as a Catholic is to follow your conscience. You are able to dissent or disagree with the hierarchy of the Church on non-infallible issues. And lo and behold, things like contraception and abortion are not infallible. So the Catholics in, you know, Poland, Portugal, the Philippines, and Pittsburgh in the United States, they're all following their consciences. They are being good Catholics. We disagree with the hierarchy in our Church. And what really we need to look at is why, when the bishop's lobby goes to Washington, D.C., and they begin not just to interfere in the lives of Catholics, but of all Americans, why is it that political power listens to them? And what could political power do? I believe there's three things that political power can do. First of all, any lobby group that comes in, whether it's an environmental group, whether it's an employer's organization, or whether it's the Conference of Catholic Bishops, I believe they all have an absolute right to go into the public square and to lobby and to give their views about things. I definitely don't want to silence the bishops in the same way I wouldn't want to silence anybody. But when they turn up at a politician's office, that politician, he or she should ask themselves three questions. Number one, who do you represent? And the reality is that the Conference of Catholic Bishops don't represent Catholics, and they don't represent even religious views in the United States, which are much more progressive on issues like sexuality. The second question is, how would, if I put what you're suggesting into law, how would that policy affect people in a pluralistic society? This is not a society that has one state religion. There's many faiths here, and people also who don't have a particular faith group and are atheists. America should celebrate all of those cultures, all of those traditions, not give a preferential option. That's the idea of religious freedom. Religious freedom is a two-sided coin. On the one side, you have freedom of religion, and on the other side, you must have freedom from religion. Otherwise, someone's religious views will be forced upon you. The third question is what you're saying factually correct? And I think while the bishops might have a heartfelt view about abortion or contraception, the fact is that very often their views are not medically sound, not medically correct. They might have a religious view as to when about abortion, but it doesn't comport with what we know about personhood. So I would say that the bishops, when it comes to that test as to whether their lobbies should be inculcated into the laws that govern us, I say no. They should have the freedom to practice what they believe in, all 350 of them, and they should leave the rest of us in America with laws that are much more generous about people being able to choose what's right for them and what's right for their families.
And Barbara, before we get back to calls, what would you add to that?
Well, I just think that I totally agree with everything John says, and I think that the issue that bears repeating is whether or not we as a society are going to allow these men to dictate what happens for health care, and more importantly, why we listen to them, considering their track record on dealing with their own who rape and molest children.
Well, we have a related caller on this, so let's hear from Roger in San Francisco. Hi, Roger. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you, Rose. I am a Catholic, and I must admit many of my views are highly reflective in what John said. But I'm troubled by this broad brush one of your guests is taking about the Catholics and about the hierarchy. I don't think there's any villains here. I don't think we're talking about evil men. We're talking about men, and in many cases women, who believe that life begins at conception. Now, we may argue against that. There may be a lot of legitimate arguments, but this is their belief. And they feel they have to fight for that belief. They believe that lives are being taken unnecessarily. So even though I'm quite liberal, and I am very worried that a man like Santorum might get the presidency. Well, I believe in Obama. I think he's a good president. I think he should be reelected. But you have to be very careful about trying to paint a brush of evil here. They are not evil men. Many mistakes have been made in the church. But we're not talking about evil here. We're talking about a belief system that many don't agree with.
Barbara, how would you respond to Roger?
Well, Roger, I wonder how you, when you say they're not evil, I want to suggest to you that right now, today, Vatican officials and Pope Benedict have the authority and the ability to take action that would actually protect children across the globe. And instead, they continue to harbor sexual predators. They refuse to reveal the names of these men who violate the children. They refuse to remove them from their positions of ministry where they can access more children. And they fail to warn parishioners, like parents, like my parents, who had a right to know that the priest who was coming to our parish was someone who had been accused of molesting children. And this, they failed to take these actions and these steps, and they have been asked to do so. So how do you tell me that that is not evil?
Well, I think from Pope on down, they're trying to do something about this. They are, I think in my own community here in San Francisco, we're working on this issue. It's, you know, we're talking about thousands of priests. I think the number is 29,000 priests in this country, 60 million Catholics. You know, I just, what I'm concerned with here is you're painting a picture of a huge church when you have some very sick men how somehow get into that body. Now, that happens everywhere in society.
But it doesn't excuse it, right, Roger?
Well, of course it doesn't excuse it.
Well, okay, so let's talk about this for a minute, Barbara, because I interviewed one of your colleagues last week, Barbara, the other Barbara, Barbara Doris. And she's the outreach director. And she said that when people seek help, she's the one they turn to. She said she receives 8 to 9 phone calls every single day from people who have been abused by a priest. So she says this is still happening as we speak, yet it's not really getting much media attention. Is that right?
Well, that's very true. And Roger, you can say that it's a small number of priests who actually are sexual predators, and if you actually look into it, in dioceses where or religious communities where someone like a government or an independent group has investigated, the actual number of predators is right around 10%. Even in one religious community, these Franciscans from out in California, they found 25% of these religious brothers and priests were molesting children. So when you are faced with those amounts and the church hierarchy refuses to do anything except coddle and shield these predators from law enforcement, there's a problem. I mean, there are sexual predators. The Dallas Morning News found over 200 sexual predators who have been criminally indicted and have fled across international boundaries, and yet the church officials do nothing to stop this. They even allow these predators to remain in ministry and have access to more children. And this is going on today in 2012.
You know, Barbara, I was surprised, actually, that this is still going on in these large numbers. For some reason, I just thought things really changed since the scandal exploded in 2002.
Well, I think everyone thought that because the bishops have done great in their public relations. And I would say that, you know, the fact that last week, the week before, the Vatican had held their first conference on dealing with the sexual abuse within the church, and they did exactly what the U.S. Catholic bishops did, which was to present this PR strategy and campaign that by and large does nothing to actually address the problem or prevent future and current abuse from happening. We have to remember it was only 1 year ago this month, last February, that a grand jury who investigated in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, they found sexual predator priests in ministry, and not just one or two or even a dozen. Actually, they found 37 accused predators working in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia 1 year ago today. And we
Can I just come in relation to what Roger said?
Go ahead, John.
I don't think it helps. One of the problems in the United States of America that I see is that in the political discourse that sometimes terms are thrown around, like evil, and I think this idea about demonizing the other, it certainly doesn't speak to where I am from, Roger, and I wouldn't want to give you the impression that you know, all of the Catholic bishops have positions that are backward on everything. I actually defend their right to speak. I think they do have a right to speak. I think that, like me, they care about the church. I'm just saying that it's important that they overreach when they say that they represent something beyond the 350 U.S. bishops, that very often they're not about extending liberty and freedom to people. They're about taking it away. And I think it's important that American citizens and Catholics, when we disagree with what our bishops say, it's very hard. You can't say something in Mass. You know, when we're there in Mass, it's not a two-way conversation. But you can say something to the Democratic Party. You can say something to the Republican Party. And I think when we see religious leaders trying to undermine our democracy by almost creating a theocracy, wanting to put something that's spiritual into law. I believe in transubstantiation. I believe the body and blood of Christ is present in the host. I don't want to make a law about that. That's my private belief. In the same way, if you're against abortion, that's fine. But I think we should allow people the right to choose. When the Supreme Court made the Roe v. Wade decision, they said that that people, you know, all the medicine, all the science, all the philosophy doesn't tell us when personhood begins. Where there is doubt, there is freedom, and there should be freedom. And I just think the bishops shouldn't get to have their own way on these issues when they don't represent the views of Americans.
And on that,
certainly, I wouldn't want to demonize a whole group of people. Horrible things have happened in relation to sexual abuse, and there certainly has been people and are people still in the Catholic Church who are guilty of some terrible crimes against children. But I don't think that means that everybody in the Catholic Church is bad or everybody in the Catholic Church is guilty.
Well, and on that point, just quickly before we go back to calls, why do you think that the bishops are given a complete microphone, an open microphone in the media, and the issues that we've been raising today are rarely raised? Why is that, John?
I think one of the reasons is this idea of deference to religion. I think in some way when I look at the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, I actually see them bending the knee as though they're schoolboys and girls again, as opposed to looking at the bishops as you would at an environmental group. There's somebody coming in to lobby you, and that's why I made the 3 points about is it factual, how does it affect other people, and what's it mean for a pluralistic type of society to have these type of demands, and who are you representing? I think politicians fail to ask those questions because they want to use religious power, and one of your callers, I think, said it well. They want to use religious power as a way of leveraging more attention and power for their party. Whether it's the Republicans using this bogus religious liberty issue, or whether it's Democrats suddenly, you know, trying to be more religious than needs be with their whole faith-based outreach. What we see with politicians is them trying to use religious power in order to leverage more power for their political party. I think it's a mistake.
Well,
because if you look at people of faith, Catholics in the United States, look at people of other faiths, we don't follow the dictates of religious leaders in the way that I think politicians presume we do. We do use our consciences. We do make up our own minds. I think politicians should be working more for the voters and working less to impress the hierarchy in a church that we don't listen to on many of these critical issues.
Well, let's take a few more calls and then we'll get final thoughts. Let's hear from Vicky in San Francisco. Hi, Vicky.
Hi. I just wanted to make a real... What John was saying is really, really true, and I believe in that. I'm originally from France, where France is a Roman Catholic country. Abortion is legal. Contraception is available to anyone when a girl is 12 years old, they can find it anywhere. But no one talks about contraception, abortion in the public square ever. Ever. You don't hear that. Mm-hmm. But then you come here, you have religious people who are talking about. So now the question that I have is, who is running the White House? Who decided that now we have to have people making compromises on the law that was already passed, which is already the law of the land.
Well, thank you for calling. I'm not sure if you are aware, but on February 16th, the House had a hearing on birth control on this very issue. And the people who testified were all men, all religious men, and none of them had any health background. And Joanne, we don't have time to take your call, but I will ask your question. She works for the YMCA, and she says that things are filtered there. No sexual predators are allowed. Why can't the Catholic Church do the same? How would you respond to that, Barbara, just briefly?
Well, I think that that's an excellent question, and it's the question we keep asking. We can understand, like even one of the things that Roger said about how an individual predator could slip through the cracks, in a sense, and get into ministry in the Catholic Church. The problem that we fail to understand is why, once they have discovered that a certain person is a sexual predator, why they continue to coddle him and empower him, shield him from law enforcement, and fail to hold him accountable. That's the thing that's the big question that we as victims can't understand. And in many ways, that produced a much larger violation or betrayal, in a sense, than the actual sexual abuse. It's like I could understand the predator, but I couldn't doing this, but I couldn't understand why the bishop allowed him to.
And Barbara, we've got about 20 seconds left. The Conference of Catholic Bishops says that it's going to make this birth control issue a massive issue in the election, that they're planning to spend money, TV ads, radio ads. What questions should the media be asking in the months to come?
Well, clearly, I think we need to ask why they don't clean up their own house and why they still refuse to expose the identities of predators, and why these predators are still on their payrolls when they do so little to reach out to victims or to assist victims.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We will definitely continue this discussion. Barbara Blaine is president of Survivors Network of Those Abused by Priests, or SNAP, and John O'Brien is the president of Catholics for Choice. Again, we did reach out to the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, but they did not return our calls. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you.
And thanks for your emails and phone calls. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. Here's what's coming up tomorrow. How safe is imported food? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about food safety. 15% of all food in the U.S. is imported, but only 1% of that food is inspected. Over 80% of fish and 45% of fresh fruit comes from another country. So why is so much of our food imported? What does food safety mean to you? And do you know where your food comes from? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcast or newsletter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Pete Misick is our web editor, and Becca Hoekstra is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Debbie Kennedy is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and produced by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.